Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Our guest this week on the podcast is Lauren Silver. She's an award-winning actor, theatre maker and a jolly anxious clown. And she creates work that's charming, joyful and really gets to the heart of who we are as people. Her work has played in national and international venues, including London's Vaudeville Theatre and the Sydney Opera House. And she's also the founder of Playwell and works with local communities and global companies to promote positive health and well-being through playful and engaging programmes.
Lauren, it's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great. I was talking to Rada earlier about improvisation because I know improvisation is very close to your heart. And I was talking about the fact that when I was younger, I was a very kind couple bought me some guitar lessons because I'd started getting into guitar and I thought this may be something I could do as a living maybe at some point in time. But they'd kind of instructed the guitar teacher to teach me some grades, some proper inverted commas music. And when I went along to have these lessons with him, we had a little chat and we kind of got a vibe for one another. And he just got out a big keyboard and started playing 12-bar blues and said, let's just get on with it and just play. And basically, he was like over the course of the next 10 weeks, he was teaching me improvisation. And I was sort of saying to Rada how much that helped me. And I was very lucky that he lives around the corner from where we live now. And I saw his wife and she said, come and have a cup of tea. And I went round and I said, Graham, thank you so much for teaching me about improvisation, because not only was it great from a musical point of view and all the bands I've been in, we just, you know, it was always helped me to be able to just play off the cuff. But just in a life kind of thing, it was great to be able to have improvisation, as knowing that you can have a go at something and it doesn't matter if it goes wrong. You can have another go at doing it a different way. And it's just this sort of really, you know, I think Rada said it was like a great template for life in some ways. And anyway, that's a long, convoluted way of asking you how you found and discovered improvisation.
Funny, exactly the same way. There was somebody who gave me a guitar. No, I'm joking. I'm just trying to think. It's the same guy. It's Graham. Does that with everyone. Classic Graham. I really like to say that, I went to drama school and trained to be an actor and really wanted to be in musical theatre, and then quite quickly realised, no, for many reasons, wasn't the right world, wasn't sort of the right thing. And I had moved back to, I trained up in Edinburgh and I moved back to Liverpool, where I'm from. And I basically tell the story that I almost fell into improv in the same way, in the same year that I fell into clowning. I'd never done any of that formally, I guess, in a formal training sense, at drama school or prior to that. growing up. It hadn't been anything in my world before. And I guess, for me, improv is complete. I remember saying to a friend not long after I'd started doing improvisation, like, this has changed my life completely. Because not only did it, you know, get me performing every week with this wonderful improv group called Impropriety and introduced me to sort of a huge world of performers and style of performance. And I really realised how much it was sort of bringing a new focus and a different shift of thinking for life skills that are completely transferable, which now ultimately I bring into a lot of my work that I do that's not even performative, sort of consultancy side. So for me, yeah, I think it honestly is a life-changing sort of focus. And I think, I know it's a podcast, but sometimes I feel when I talk about improv or clowning, like my eyes go into this sort of weird, like I don't know, like big sort of spaceships. Yeah, I guess so. Like, what am I thinking? What's the word I'm thinking of? Great improvising around a riff that never worked. But my eyes go sort of wide and like glaze over, I think, when I start talking about it, because yeah, I think the sort of transferable skills into life, and especially into the worlds of sort of support, or if you're, you know, anxious or any sort of mental health world, which is where ultimately my, you know, where my world sort of circles around. It's just, yeah, that it's amazing really what you can learn and what you can bring into your own life.
There are so many, like you said, when you're talking about life skills there and improvisation, I remember probably my first like experience of seeing improvisation was Whose Line Is It Anyway? Or I used to watch on TV, which I absolutely love.
I love that show.
I love so much. And actually, when you're talking about life skills, there are so many life skills, aren't there, in terms of that. There's kind of not being held to a structure. There's, you know, imagination. There's adaptability. There's you know, kind of facing up to, I suppose, being judged or failing or not knowing what to do. There's a teamwork, for example, like in that show particularly. And also just finding the humour in things that haven't got a structure and aren't tightly held. And I think in society, everything is so tightly held. And so we're encouraged that everything should have a structure and an outcome, and everything should be done in a certain way. And improvisation, I think, gives a massive relief from all of those pressures.
Yeah.
But also it allows you to express yourself for who you truly are, which again is kind of really dampened down, isn't it, in the world we live in, and not really encouraged.
Definitely. And the sort of tightly held thing that you talk about makes me immediately think of, I'm sure, Radha, you and I must have talked about this over at some point, was there's this lovely phrase in improv. So we're talking about theatrical improvisation, which is ultimately what we're talking, you know, hold on one second. There was a fly here that I see it just go across the screen. Absolutely huge. I'm going to try and, where is it?
You're not improvising this, are you?
I'm honestly not improvising. You did see it. It looked absolutely enormous. I know this isn't a bit, I promise. Oh my God, it's so big. Okay, if it comes back, we'll get it.
So while you look to the fly, I'm just explaining to the people listening. So we connected, didn't we, during the pandemic or just after the pandemic, because you were basically doing a piece of work for a theatre in Liverpool.
Yes.
Around sort of mental health and how we were going to sort of manage coming out of lockdown and restrictions, and how you could perhaps create a performance around that.
Exactly. So I was commissioned initially pre-pandemic. So that sort of lovely circles that back. So pre-pandemic, I create theatre, and I was ready to co-produce this full solo show that I'd been working on for years that was going to go to the Liverpool Everyman, and then it was going to go up to Edinburgh. And then the pandemic happened, and in a parallel universe, it went brilliantly and had a wonderful life, which is what we like to imagine. But we met, yeah, because I was looking at some clinical supervision on the work that I was doing, because a year later, the same theatre in Liverpool commissioned me to create a solo clown show that was going to be live streamed to audiences who were going to watch it from home, all about leaving lockdown and going into the real world. And so we were looking at, so because a lot of the work that I do under my company Playwell crosses around the lines of clowning and improv and a lot of sort of well-being, mental health support, sort of it straddles sort of all of that, those worlds. We were looking at some sort of support really for us to create the work that we'd be doing as safely, and that's where we were introduced at some point in the world. And then, yeah, you were the first person I thought of who would sort of fit that world really well. When I was thinking about the holding tightly, I can go back to that right now. It's this lovely saying in improv called hold on tightly, let go lightly. I think it's called, that was it. Hold on tightly, let go lightly. So the idea that you can, if you're approaching the stage and you have a scene that you're going to do. So for example, there's people doing something and you're like thinking, I'm going to prepare this. I'm going to go in and I'm going to play. The next scene is going to be me playing, being a horse, and the person that's going to come in with me, and we haven't prepared this, I'm going to make them be a donkey and we're going to have this scene, and you step forward and that other person makes a big offer. And with improv, the idea is that you say yes, and so you accept the offer that's been given, and you build from that. It's not necessarily about agreeing, it's about accepting. That's the thing. So when the pandemic happened, so many of us were holding on tightly to the plans that we had prior to the pandemic. And then ultimately everything disappeared. Everything went, especially if you work in the creative industries or live theatre, certainly everything went. So for me, I had to, even in that moment, go, right, okay, those plans aren't happening anymore and there's absolutely nothing I can do. I could try and put that show on. I could go up to Edinburgh or go to Liverpool and bang on the door of the theatre and tell them that's going to happen, but it's not going to. You know, in that same way, you can't just go straight into the scene and be like, I'm going to be a horse. Well, this other person's, you know, giving
it's
you an offer.
It's a typewriter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Taking some
minutes. I mean,
minutes
you could, but I don't know where that scene would end. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And it could do, it definitely could do, but there's so much about listening and being aware and reading a situation for you to be able to walk into it and almost stay open to what might happen. And that was ultimately what forced our hand, really. And I definitely feel that, you know, that training that I did for so long, had I not sort of held on tightly, let go lightly of the plans that I had, I wouldn't be doing the work that I'm doing now. And the things wouldn't have, you know, developed in the way that they have done, which are good things. I must stress that it's been a really interesting slight pivot in the way that the world would have worked. I wouldn't have been able to maybe have done the show with you, you know, a year later with that theatre. So that to me has become such a really helpful phrase to think about, especially when we try to control things that we're not able to control. It's not easy to let it go. It's not, you know, I'll just let it go and forget about it. But it's almost the let go lightly thing is a gentler way of giving yourself a bit of kindness whilst going, okay, what's the other, you know, looking around at your other options and staying a bit more open and present to what's happening.
I love that. And can I just say, when I got your email, you know, saying, you know, this is who I am, you know, I've got this idea, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, it's a clown. I've got an email from a clown. And I was like, I definitely have to speak to this woman. I have to chat to her, because I've been, I mean, Giles will know, and you know, Lauren, probably just from chatting to me, yeah, I've got a big imagination. I love play. I love creativity. I love new things. And I just thought, wow, this is fascinating. I want to learn more about clowning. So for people listening, what is clowning and how did you become a clown?
So I get asked this question a lot, and I've now had to just lean into the fact that being asked what clowning is as a clown, I'm going to probably get it wrong for a lot of people who are like, that's not clowning, this is clowning. So I'm likely to get this wrong, but the easiest way to think about the clowning that I do, I would say, is very similar to the Mr. Bean style physical comedy, often less verbal, than it is. But I do speak in a lot of my shows, a lot of my work, a lot of my life. So sorry to everyone. That's sort of a baseline version to give it sort of a visual of theatrical clowning, theatrical performing is the work that I do. And I got into it because I, after finishing drama school and moving back to Liverpool to start working and auditioning, the most amazing theatre company called Spy Monkey, who are incredible and have been going for over 20 years, an international company, and they have been touring and creating the most amazing work. And they're one of the chaps from that company was co-directing, a chap called Toby was co-directing a show, a clown show about the Olympic Games with a Liverpool-based theatre company that are no more, but they were called Spike Theatre, and there were auditions for that, and I got an audition, turned up being like, I don't really know what clowning is, but give, you know, we'll see what that is. But and got that job, and then ultimately all of my work, I just was like, oh, this is it. It was the first time, I think, you know, at drama school you try loads of things, and ultimately they're trying to force you or put you into a bracket, even though they probably say that they don't do that. They really do. They don't. Oh, not often they sort of bring you. Well, certainly when I was training many years ago, they didn't bring you as much of a sort of plethora of theatrical styles. Clowning was one of the things that I went, oh, this is it. This is what I do. This is, I found my world. I found people, and then I went on to train with a clowning master called Philippe Gollier, who is ultimately one of the old, he is old, but one of the longest running clowning teachers there ever was. He was trained by Jacques Lecoq. And so a really brief 101 on it is that it sort of comes from a style of theatre called Commedia dell'arte, which is inspired things like panto. It's a very sort of classic, this very specific sort of character style and genres of characters that people are, you can be, and in clowning you have that as well. I'm trying to think of what that word is, but words are often not my strong point, so it will come to me. And then a lot of that, so, but any TV show, often many TV shows, you can sort of see what those different sorts of personas are. And then it's inspired things like, you know, the jester in a, you know, medieval clowning, and then panto it inspires. And then, you know, I would say in London, a very modern one is the Mischief Theatre people who do Play That Goes Wrong, Peter Pan That Goes Wrong. That's clown as well. So for people that may have thought, I've never really watched that, that, you know, they're a perfect example of what clowning is. So that's my world. That's the world of clown, and the things that I love about it, I guess, to be a clown, of my understanding, is everybody has that part of them in there. It's not, you know, it's that sort of playful, open-hearted, very vulnerable, very optimistic, quite childlike. And what I love about clowning is there's no fourth wall. So, you know, the audience are there, you acknowledge the audience are there. So it's very much a shared experience, even though you can be on stage on your own, you're very aware of the world. I could talk about it for so long. There's loads of other things I love about it, but that's an introduction to it. I can share more, but I didn't want a monologue in my first question. But yeah, it's great. I love it so much. Yeah.
Well, what I love about the answer is obviously that last bit about play, and how that is something as we grow older, we tend to stop doing as much. And obviously that's something that, you know, would be nice for us to do more of. And I think performing obviously allows you to do that, but it's funny how we lose that along the way, that idea of play. And, you know, and as a performer, as an actor, you are playing a lot of the time. Do you think that's something that we can, all of us could be doing a bit more of?
I think one thing I always think about is what our definition is when we don't play. So if we don't play, I assume it's our assumption of what we think probably work. It's work or play is probably the one or the other.
Yeah.
And I really like this story that I read once, which was about a labourer or a gardener or somebody that was like digging in a garden, like doing some work. So let's say a gardener, but gardening's really fun, but let's make it less sexy than that. And they decide that, oh, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to go and play the piano. I want to go and just go and have a little play on the piano for a few, you know, for an hour and just tinkle about on a piano and have a lovely time. And then if we sort of flip that round and a professional pianist decides that they want to have a break from practicing for hours and hours to go and like dig up in the garden and, you know, plant some nice things or, you know, and just go and be in the garden for a bit, you know, and plant some veg, you know, for us, that's that shift of how we assume or what we see as our downtime, what we might see as quote downtime, and that's when we play, or how can we bring sort of both things into our work, you know, or into what we're doing, so we don't see them as two separate things. We don't see them as two separate options, you work or you play. I mean, I always, with the work that I do, when I teach, for want of a better word, corporates to think of it, non-creative people, though everyone's creative and it's all a load of rubbish, let me highlight that it's all rubbish, I'm a real stickler for language, that people that would see themselves as not creative, I ultimately coach them and teach them how to do clowning and improv and bring that, you know, bringing play into their world. And one of the first things I always say is, you know, when you go into work, when you get ready for work and generally you put your work clothes on, you're ultimately putting on a costume, surely, you know, unless you are, what's his name? Tom, the comedian who always wears a suit. Tom, that was great. I'm really giving great reference points here.
Giles and I are not being very helpful either because I can't think of,
I was thinking Joe Wilkinson. Yeah. He wears a suit.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to think. Anybody? Maybe I'll just be less abstract about it. If I imagine the people that sometimes I go in and coach, and they wear a suit and go and work in the city, yeah, that for them, I would say to them, do you generally wear that on your weekend or in, you know? And you don't. You are putting on a costume to go to work, and then when you go to work, you take that costume off and you go and hang out with your family. And in that same way, if you start just shifting your perspective of feeling like, I don't know how to play, I think that's the thing. I've never, ever said to somebody, I'm teaching you how to play, because you know how to do that. And I think there's a lot of books written or blogs or TED Talks about how to play as an adult. And I think they're great. I'm not trying to poo-poo on that world, but it's really for us to, for me, it's about reminding ourselves that we have that in us and that we know how to do that because we're doing it all the time. But it's just what we've started to do is separate those two things off.
Well, that's why we got you on the podcast, Oren, because you've just exactly reflected what the name of the podcast is. And I think you're right. I think it's innate, but I think a lot of things cover it up. Maybe that's work, busyness, fear of being vulnerable, fear of being judged, fear that, you know, or rather kind of fitting in with other people because no one else around you is playing, in inverted commas. Therefore, you know, to be an adult, you have to be serious and you have to be this and you have to be that and all the kind of ideas we have about what being an adult means. But I think it is very, very much innate, that sense. And you see it when, you know, when adults go to children's parties or if they're given an opportunity at Christmas, you know, maybe they've had a drink or two, you know, you see the play coming out of people when they don't feel, when they feel comfortable, they don't feel so vulnerable, which is really interesting. When people say the word clown, I think people have different associations with that word. And that's probably related a lot to our childhoods, what we've grown up with, maybe the films we've watched. You know, Giles and I were talking before you came on. Yeah, exactly, about a lot of people being scared of clowns or a lot of people thinking that clowns are performers who make you laugh. But there are also obviously clowns that are, you know, that kind of relate to sadness. I was thinking about, I mean, yeah. Pierrot, I think, is a was a clown. Yeah. I remember having like a little badge of Pierrot when I was growing up. And so I'm interested in your take on that, but also I'm interested in terms of, is clowning or our ability to sort of play, is it actually kind of putting on another mask, or is it actually about taking a mask off and being more authentic in ourselves in terms of showing sadness and happiness and whatever we feel? What's your take on that?
I would definitely say it's the latter, because if we think about it more like a childlike quality of ourselves, which then ultimately frees us up for that play part that we remember, because, you know, every book will say to you, tap into that part of you when you were a child. And, you know, if it's safe to do that, then that's what we're sort of encouraged to do. Just going to let the plane go past now. That's the huge fly. It's like bringing his mates. What did you do?
That's another bit of improv, isn't it, there, Lauren? It's like she's really testing us with it.
Honestly, it's just nonstop.
I'm waiting for that horse to come in and background in a minute.
Like bringing me a cup of tea. I think that when I, especially when I teach clowning, and I would say to everybody, you're all a clown, you know, everybody's got that part of them. It starts to relax people a bit, because it's ultimately, there is a performance side of it, but it is also a part of you that is in, yeah, that is inherently there. It's that sort of charming, childlike, open, sort of open-hearted quality, as I was saying. There are also many other stars. There is obviously the circus clown. Very sad that I haven't turned up with my red nose and my big shoes, which often people say, is that what you do? And I'm like, sadly not. So there is that star, which is the more traditional sort of makeup with a red nose. Although, yeah, when I was training with Gollier, we were all given a sort of red nose. And that's seen as they call it the smallest mask. So it is a mask. They see that as like the smallest mask that you can have. So there's that. And then there's something which I've always been really interested in. So there's also dark clown, which just what it says. It's a much more, I'm trying to think of reference points, but I will send them to you if I can't remember. But one of, there's and something called Buffon. And Buffon was seen as quite a political clown. So it was sort of came from, again, I'm going to sort of bastardize this explanation of it, but the idea that they were sort of the outcasts of society many, many years ago, who would like live in the hills, and, you know, the upper classes would sort of bring them in. So if we imagine like a medieval town, they'd bring them in and they would put on in a style of like a jester, but it would be more a political, they would ultimately like take the piss out of the upper classes, but would do it in such a way where they were seemingly vulnerable and sort of on the back foot, you know, on a much sort of lower status, but it enabled them to be very truthful and very honest about politically what's happening. And you know, we see that a lot now in satire, in a lot of more modern day satire, a lot of people that are on Twitter that will Munya Chihuahua, I think he does, I would say that he does quite a good Buffon style because of who he is. And you know, he's northern, he's brown, he's ultimately, you know, not a white middle class man. He has that level to be able to be quite sort of satirical in a really funny way, but also quite cutting, and will make a very strong point in a lot of, and you know, brilliant and so intelligent, but sort of can play that very Buffon style. I mean, a most popular version is Ali G. Was one of the first, you know, mainstream sort of Buffon. So it's that sort of style of satire, which I also really love, because it isn't just about the sort of Mr. Bean version or a circus clown. You know, we don't all walk around with like a custard pies in our hand and a flower with a, you know, but it's that sort of idea of the transferable styles, which are really powerful to watch as well.
And I suppose revealing of truth, or revealers of truth. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting.
Mm. Yeah, it's far more sophisticated than, like you say, it is. We do have this. And I'm going to say, do you enjoy that kind of research into it? Is that something that you've kind of become an acolyte for it?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. And I think that's why it's so fascinating, and people can, you know, we can learn and we can train, and that there are many layers to it and many levels, because ultimately it is about the human character. It's about who we are. But, and okay, on a base level, if the easiest way for us to talk about something is to laugh together through that, or to have an emotion together that, and you know, we want to laugh and we want to enjoy that, that can be a very sort of base level of watching a clown show about something and talking about it. And that was, you know, that was the world that I found when I made my first show, which was an autobiographical one woman show, absolute classic, about my initially it was about my experiences with sort of ill health, but turned into being about more about a celebration of therapy. And the idea for the show is the clown, which is ultimately me, decides that because I hate surprise parties, I'm going to throw myself my own surprise party as a version of exposure therapy, because I've read a book on it and I've researched it, and therefore that's going to work and the audience are going to help me do that. And it became this interactive show, which was, you know, and that was a way in which to talk about something that could have been quite glib and quite sad, but in a way that got the audience laughing together and it being experiential, as opposed to doing an hour's talk on it. We were experiencing what that might feel like to feel anxious. I put very safe moments for the audience to start to experience what it might feel without ever telling them. So it became an experience that we could do that. And I feel like there's only so many things that you can do creatively to have that experience. And for me, it was, you know, giving audience members raffle tickets and telling them that they're going to, you know, later on, that's how I would pull the audience members, audience interaction out. So to select an audience member, they would have to show their ticket. So for those people who would tell me afterwards, oh, I never, ever get anxious, and I felt so anxious sitting at a chair holding a raffle ticket, I would, you know, as somebody who goes to see theatre, I would hate that. I much prefer being on the other side. But to me, that was, you know, it's all these ways in which we can share experiences through a creative outlet that isn't reading a book or, you know, watching a talk or hearing somebody tell their experiences, actually being in the room doing it together. So that's what, you know, it's one of the many things I love about clown.
That's so powerful. And like you were saying before about, you know, clowning being very much related to character or characters. And I suppose in that example, you know, the people in the audience there were exploring their own characters, their own sort of narratives about who they were, but also because you sharing in those kind of collective emotions or experiencing emotions they may not have experienced very often or perhaps as intensely, also then encourages empathy and encourages understanding, and like you say, collectively brings people together. Lauren, we could talk to you all day because you are absolutely fascinating. And I've learned so much from you in just the last sort of half an hour or so. But what is the one thing that you think we've forgotten about but would be really great for us to do more of or to remember in our daily lives for our well-being, for ourselves, or just generally for the world? What would that one thing be?
Oh, I should know that this was coming. So it's the name of the podcast, and I don't want to say remember to play because I've just been saying we know, but can I? A thing that I really love about clown is that you know, a pure clown character has no past and has no future. It exists only in the present, and that's where a clown can be. That's where a clown lives. So it can't judge, and it can only empathise with the information that it's been given. So it's hard to say to somebody, stay present, and we forget how to do that. But I think I would say if we can, maybe it's about remembering that we inherently know how to be a clown, but if we know how to be present and stay playful. I think so. I think we've all forgotten how to be a clown, and now we need to remember how to do that.
I love that. Oh my gosh, that was a perfect answer, yeah. Wasn't it, Giles? Oh my gosh,
that was amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks so much. Honestly, I'm just improvising. Oh, thanks, Bo.
No, Lauren, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, and I'm fascinating to talk to you. And thank you for sharing.
Yeah, and keep being amazing because you are definitely.
Thanks. I'm going to go find that fly now. Have a chat. Thank you both so much. Honestly, such a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, Lauren, that was so lovely. Wow. Oh,
thanks. Can't believe that. My God, I'm glad that was recorded. Who knows if that would ever be, I'd ever say that again. Oh, thank you. I bet you say that to all the clowns. That's the side of Radha I've not seen yet. She's like, that was boring. Yeah. Oh. Oh my gosh, it was wonderful. Thank you both so much.
So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.